Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 540. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
It's that season for Christmas, so things are a little bit crazy in the DeFrango household. But, it is nothing that we won't get through. So that is for the positives. But other than that, I cannot believe how forgettable SmackDown has become. The last two consecutive weeks, I've watched it on Sunday. And on Monday, when they're showing highlights on Raw, I'm like, huh, I don't remember that. And for some reason, the whole dog food angle with Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns completely slipped my mind. That really shouldn't have been something that slipped my mind.
Yeah, no, it was kind of the big moment of SmackDown. Yeah, I completely understand. This new schedule has, to me, it's not kind to SmackDown having any, resonance by the next week. I'm not really sure, 100% sure why that is, but it is. I do agree with you.
It's just been kind of weird. Yeah, you would think that I'd remember more of it because I just watched the day before, but I really just feel like I'm kind of jamming it in. And I mean, that's going to be the other kind of interesting thing about this week, because I mean, we've already talked on air a couple of times about recording schedules, but not only that, since Sunday has seemed to be my SmackDown day, what the hell happens on the days that there are pay-per-views on Sundays, like this week for TLC? The chances that I watch SmackDown before that are... That's kind of a tight window. Just because there's usually things to do, especially at this time of the year, that do not lend themselves to sitting down and watching TV a lot. So, yeah, SmackDown's going to take a hit probably again this week. I will say one thing about this week's programming. I do feel like at least with Raw this week, it did make me say there is a pay-per-view on Sunday.
Yeah, they did a good job on Monday, at least hammering home, even though the match wasn't announced till the last week, that the Women's Tag Team Championship TLC match on Sunday. So they definitely did it. They did a good job with that. I am hugely in favor, I think I mentioned even last week, of running show-long storylines that weave throughout the show that you don't know, when the next time these characters are going to appear in a segment and drive the story forward. They actually had two separate, first half of the show running story, and then another, back half of the show running story with the Kevin Owens, with the Seth Rollins reveal, and then...
Oh, yeah.
And then the Kabuki Warriors and Becky and Charlotte feud as well. So that really did help a lot to me. And obviously, of course, it just happened last night. And
it does always help. I guess that's one thing that I'm not sure that I've tweeted about SmackDown the last couple of weeks. I do always find that when I write anything, I always used to do that for tests too, honestly, is I'd always write write my test material. I found that I remembered it better that way. I do think it helps me remember Monday since I do the column still. But I do think that it was one of the better shows. Like, I mean, we were talking, I mean, I believe that it's even in the title that the WWE Doldrums. And this week I'm like, oh my gosh, like, aside from Raw would have been a lot better had they not laid a stink burger out first thing out of the gate on the show. That kind of blunted momentum. But really, like, the rest of the 2.5 hours of the programming, like you said, like, it went pretty smooth, and it didn't feel like it. And I believe that you and I have both mentioned it, it's just like, oh, this is when this segment is on. You know, and they just popped in those Becky and Charlotte segments at kind of random times, and you know, the between the Zelina Vega slash Andrade slash Carrillo, and then Charlie Caruso, like, killed me
I
this
did like
week.
that, yeah.
Because, you know, she has, yeah, the Spanish speaking segment, and then she gets caught in the Japanese speaking segment. And, you know, she's just kind of pulling out her hair, which was pretty funny. And, you know, I do think that just, you know, something else that we've been beating the drum about, like, you can tell more of their expressions from them speaking their native language than making them speak English. And I think people get it, especially in something that's inherently supposed to be emotional, you know? I mean, there is supposed to be an investment in wrestling.
Right, of course.
So, you know, I do think that it helps quite a bit to do that, to let them speak in their native tongue. At least some to help drive points home. But yeah, I guess I'm really a fan of seeing this Kabuki Warriors Charlotte and Becky match. It has been a little bit weird that I feel like Becky has been caught in a lot of tag teaming ever since winning the championship.
Yes, she has lately.
So that part of it, like, and it's one of those things that I kind of understand. Like, they feel, I think at this point, the WWE feels like they've tested out some of the younger people, and they're like, they're not as good as the four of them, and we can't keep on having the four of them fight. So what the hell are we gonna do here? Seems to be what's going on, in my opinion, and moving them to these super teams in the SmackDown or in the tag team division is one way to kind of stretch out these feuds from happening. Because I guess I would fully expect a Charlotte Becky feud again sometime in the not too distant future.
Oh, I it can be a little distant for my tastes.
Yeah, I mean, they should put as much distance between the next feud as possible. Just because they've been at it a lot, but you know, it's kind of hard to keep them out of each other's hair when one of them has the title belt.
Yeah, it is pretty hard with them, both on the same show, and to keep them apart of facing each other, and to keep from running through too many title defenses for Becky. We have this situation where Becky and Charlotte are put together as a tag team to go after the tag titles with the against the Kabuki Warriors, which I like it. I like the way they did things on Monday. if you ignore all the other times in the last few months that Becky and Charlotte teamed and got along just fine.
Yeah, they did add a little bit of friction there that was not necessary, really. Because they have still expressed that they wouldn't mind going after each other, but for the most part, they've buried that hatchet.
Yeah, Charlotte has just been the absolute most... Maybe there's some others, but certainly Charlotte is at least one of the most inconsistent characters throughout this entire year. I mean, you don't know whether she's a face or a heel from show to show.
yeah, and it really hasn't hurt her too much, luckily. Like, I still feel like she's getting a pretty good reaction when she's coming out.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you are right, though. Like, her character's been all over the place. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess it is just because she's kind of been in the same spot. Like, this is the first time... Because, what did they say? It had been, like, 4 years, basically, that she ran the division?
Pretty much.
I feel like the... Okay, yeah. So I felt like that was the number that someone else had had it. So she's just kind of... I mean, this is the first time that she's been in this spot in her career where she's had to take a back seat for a little while. Because even in the... Yeah. Especially... Yeah. I mean, I don't think she ever really took a back seat when her and Sasha were trading title reigns. Probably just because they kept on feuding with each other.
Yeah. That was the... You know what? I certainly think one of the few things that... When they kick Baron Corbin to the curb as general manager and promised all this change, and then not a change came. But one thing they did do at this time last year was they got rid of the guaranteed rematches for the former champion. Now they have to go to great lengths to get a rematch when they want to, but at least they're not bound by having to have rematches. Because that Charlotte and Sasha feud just went on forever because they just kept trading the title and they kept saying, well, she's got a guaranteed rematch.
yeah, that has been one of the better things that the WWE has done over the course of the year. I mean, they haven't had a whole lot of big victories in storytelling this year. But that has been one of them, and it does make a lot of sense. Like, it gives them it gives that feud some reason to have other people running interference in it. You know, whether it happens to be someone that's associated with them temporarily or someone more permanently. You know, I do think that that's kind of helped make the programming more palatable this year in a general sense. Cause sometimes that beginning of the feud, or like kind of the reigniting of the feud, was always a little bit tough, but having an extra hurdle to get back to that feud really helps, especially in this case, normally babyface is losing and trying to get back there. Like, it gives them a little momentum to get back to facing the heel again. Would you agree?
No, yeah, I totally agree.
So, that all came off of Becky and Charlotte and TLC. I guess what's to be made, since we're sticking mostly on Raw, since we did somewhat enjoy it, I suppose the other, kind of length of the show reveal that wasn't a reveal in some ways. Seth Rollins being behind AOP, but then him claiming that he was not behind AOP even after he was with them.
I guess they're gonna leave it, kind of ambiguous whether or not Seth was telling the truth there. But Seth being able to, the reveal in the van was fairly hokey. I mean, it was definitely, super villain type stuff. But they did get, they got Seth Rollins fully on the heel side. He took out Kevin Owens with the stomp on a concrete floor. So I assume KO will not be ready to compete, but for them to have a match at TLC. I can assume that. I don't know for sure. The show didn't end with any kind of announcement of this leading to a match between them.
Yeah, I would hope that they would keep him out Sunday at least. Like that, I really hate when they no sell kind of something that should be a pretty major injury, and that one should be a pretty major one in my books. So hopefully they don't have a match at TLC. And, I guess I'm with you. Like, I don't feel like they're going to have one. Like, if they were going to have one, I feel like they would have announced it.
Right, yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah, and then, Seth got to cut his big promo. He got to let out, whatever his, storyline frustrations along with, I'm sure, some real life frustrations of the last few months of his life. Everything that's kind of that's happened, all the stuff on Twitter, all of both the storyline stuff and all the stuff on Twitter, all the crap Seth's gotten. You get just to kind of throw it back at people. So the issue with Seth to me has always been he has the persona of a heel, but the moveset of a babyface.
No.
So it's once again he's better suited to be a heel, but he's just got to stop doing so much cool so much flippy shit in his matches.
I guess that'd be interesting. I feel like more people have changed their movesets recently than in the past, or at least added some moves here or there to help bring a little bit of a variety. And I think Rollins is fully capable of doing so. Like, I mean, any wrestler is. It just remains to be seen if it actually happens.
Right. So, no, I mean, It's been pretty much it's been written in the stars since they started this whole Bray Wyatt thing, that whole Bray Wyatt thing that just completely killed Seth, and then Seth's own lack of self control on Twitter, just led to this landslide of anti Seth. Fervor that you can't. It's that is different than John Cena or even Roman Reigns being booed, because it did feel like Seth didn't have any fans left.
Agreed. Yeah, like that. That was. Yeah, because even when the internet people are like, man, he's pretty terrible right now. It's just like, youch, you do not have anyone in your corner right now.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. I would hope that this will bring him back, like, because honestly, like you said, like, his demeanor and the way he delivered that promo on Monday was just like, I'm like, you know, it just doesn't come off as natural to him to be a baby face. Like, it's one of those things where just because he was on the show a little bit later, Sami Zayn, I remember everyone freaking out, "Oh, why are you doing that? He's kind of the ultimate baby face underdog type guy." And then he turns heel, and the guy's just an annoying jackass now in the most positive way possible. But yeah, like, some guys can do both directions, and Seth Rollins does not seem capable of doing that. You know, like, even weirdly enough, Randy Orton has somehow become a babyface recently for reasons that I think everyone that does this show is confused by.
Yeah, it just it was, yeah, we talked about it yesterday, and I'm gonna use the same joke. It came out of nowhere. You know, it's definitely very weird that, you know, Randy's just a baby face now, but that's the way things have ended up. They wanted another a new baby face after to make up for Seth going heel. Kevin Owens is certainly the number one being positioned to be the number one baby face on Raw. Guess the number two baby face would have to be Rey Mysterio then.
Yeah.
And then yeah, Randy then you yeah, Randy Orton now moves kind of in there. It's yeah, I mean, really, KO's the only one who isn't an a you know an aging, you know, superstar who doesn't have a lot of all that many miles on him. I mean, the baby face situation on Raw is pretty interesting, actually. How things have ended up since everything started going downhill for Seth.
Well, I'm gonna admit I do, at least on that front, I've found things pretty interesting. Like, the faces on Raw have been pretty varied just in general. Because there's that kind of baby face situation, and I mean, you have kind of the guys a little bit associated. I mean, Ricochet is still hanging out there. Like, I don't think he's number two, but I do feel like they have aspirations for him to be a number one or a number two at some juncture. But there also been, I guess I've liked the pushes recently of Buddy Murphy. I guess even though he's been catching a lot of L's, I'm okay seeing more Akira Tozawa. And Aleister Black, they finally started to kind of be consistent about his ring time and his promo time, rather than, you know, dicking around with this "no one's answering my door" bullshit. But it is the one detriment to that I've seen is that some of these guys are kind of going up against each other to kind of, you know, get the upper hand, and I wish that there was someone else on the roster that maybe could help move these guys all up together before someone catches an L.
Yeah, they did a good job with Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy, you know, giving them both, you know, dominant wins and promo time before their match on Sunday, which is a, you know, on a show that's, you know, definitely a B show. Neither world title is on the line, and a number of top talents appear to be sitting this one out. It's a big opportunity for them still, you know, for them to get a, you know, about a 15 minute match to show out. And yes, as you said, one of them does have to lose that match, which is unfortunate because both of them have been very good lately. And granted, one loss doesn't mean it's all over for them, but it does mean that one continues to move up while the other is going to have a little longer road.
I guess I'm thinking that Buddy Murphy just has a longer road ahead of him, just out of the natural habitat of I would still call it main roster WWE, since NXT is still being treated in a different manner than Raw and or SmackDown. So, at least the nature of the pushes, I should say.
Right.
I do think that Buddy Murphy kind of has a harder road just because of his size. But, man, he is a huge 205. He's kind of like Neville in that fact, where it's just like when you see him hit people, you're just bound to believe it just because of of his build. Because there was that one, and I did I agree, like, for the most part, that was some good stuff that they had them do. Like, they kind of focused on the matches during the show, which helped a lot. And I guess another one that is on the radar of two young guys facing each other, it would fall under Andrade taking on Humberto Carrillo, your new favorite wrestler.
Oh yeah, I love me some Humberto Carrillo. Yeah, I just don't. I just don't get it so far. I just don't see anything special in them. But they did give him, and Andrade still had a very good match. So why would they break up Andrade and Zelina? That is so unnecessary. And possibly detrimental to Andrade.
Yeah, as much as it doesn't seem like they have any faith in Zelina Vega to wrestle regularly.
No, and they really shouldn't. I mean, she's fine in spots, but I've never really thought of her as a worker, even dating back to TNA. So yeah, no, they found the perfect role for her. I mean, Andrade was almost, essentially almost, released and just, floundering in NXT before they were put together. It's a great act together. I know in real life they're dating / married to different people, but so what? Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, and they don't, it's kind of funny because unlike Bobby Lashley and Lana and Rusev, like, they don't need, there's never anything awkward going on with Zelina Vega and Andrade. Like, the whole time that they presented them, whether in NXT or up on the main roster, like, they've never made it sexual, which is,
No, you didn't miss anything. You're correct. But boy, did Samoa Joe have to take Jerry Lawler to task for even suggesting it during the course of last night's commentary. Because, of course, that's where the old pervert's mind's always going to go.
Oh, man, I'm kind of sorry that I don't remember that one.
Yeah, Lawler kept talking about, you know, jealousy and you know, Selena's looks, and then Samoa Joe finally just had to shut him down and was like, King, don't question the professionalism of Zelina Vega. Something of that sort.
Yeah, because that's one of those ones. It's been so interesting. Well, A, they've dropped the whole Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch are, well, now engaged. At least last I checked. They kind of dropped that whole angle. And I know that obviously Charlotte has shared it a lot on social media that her and Andrade are dating, but...
Oh, they are all over each other, but, you know, yeah, but good for them, and it has absolutely nothing to do with either of their characters.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of, that's fine, like, you know, it kind of is what it is, like, I mean, when you make the comparison of, well, just because the wife has been complaining about the show in general, I'm like, yeah, there are just some bad times that kind of end up happening. And this is kind of one of them. And yeah, I don't think you know, like, they're characters on TV and they're allowed to treat them as such. Like, they don't need to be on screen together all the time, you know? Obviously, they spend a lot of time together outside of the ring, so it's okay to take a few minutes. But, oh, and I guess to get back to it, yeah, like, Vega and Andrade has never been made awkward. It's got to be more awkward when you're doing the love triangle stuff, knowing that there is a pretty terrible history of love triangles coming true.
Yeah, you definitely, you hit the nail on the head there, yes. So, but no, in those situations, there's nothing, anything like that. It you know, as it's been noted many times over the years, Vince is very weird about, you know, quote-unquote managers, and talent needing to talk for themselves, even when they can't or they shouldn't, and it's been detrimental to many characters, and there's no way. Nah, I am vehemently against an Andrade Zelina split.
Well, yeah, I'm in the same boat. I hope it doesn't happen. Just because, yeah, like, if you don't have faith in her to be a wrestler, like, it's one of those, what are you paying her for then? And I mean, I think that she does enough with the outside interference, and the guys do a great job of selling her offense. I mean, she always does a good job of picking very advantageous spots to help make the moves, which is usually some type of a head scissors takeover, look really good and painful on the outside while probably not being very much so, at least on the scale of professional wrestling. So yeah, there's no reason to break them up. It is a unit because it's just probably bad for both of them. Like, even as much as I've enjoyed Asuka and Kairi Sane doing their Japanese stuff, like, Asuka does bust out the English just enough here to keep. Keep you honest. Is that a good way to say that? I don't even know. You know, right, like, she does it enough to remind you that she knows English, maybe. It's just... I hope that's a decent way to put it. You know, just to say, hey, you know, we're kind of putting one over on you just by speaking Japanese. Which is good, because they're heels and they should be doing that kind of stuff. I guess, I'm trying to think if there was anything else, because those two feuds kind of did make me, think about things. We've talked about the, oh, well, I guess it does need to be talked about, since we're rightfully avoiding Lana and Rusev talk part whatever in too short of too many weeks. The Street Profits need to be talked about, unfortunately.
Yes, they do.
Now, I have admitted a number of times on this program that I'm just getting news from Google currently. So I have not really, I've gotten some pro wrestling news, but not quite to the extent of, did the Street Profits poop in somebody's sandwich?
I don't think they did. No, no, no.
Okay, so I was wondering if I was missing that type of a story. I guess I found it rather unique that they essentially wore a, I guess if you want to say it, a highbrow squash job for the Viking Raiders. I mean, they did get in some very early offense in a near fall, which no one has done, I guess. So you could argue that they've put up a better fight than most other teams. But, oh man, that was a dismantling in my opinion.
Yeah, I did not understand at all why the Street Profits were put in that position to take that loss like that. I feel like, you know, well, the Street Profits threw all their best offense at the Viking Raiders, and the Viking Raiders just brushed it off and kind of destroyed them at the end. It was not that close of a match. The post match show of respect really rang hollow. I mean, it was not a great showing for the Street Profits.
Yeah, and I mean, it did make me think that this was one of the few shows, because of all the storytelling, there wasn't any one long match. Like, the WWE has definitely become dependent, and I feel like we've mentioned it a number of times, too, like the 20-minute match just to help chew up time on the program. And, yeah, if you're going to do that type of a show of respect after the match, it does need to be, well, maybe not 20 minutes. I think you need to at least go 15 is the shortest that you could probably get away with that, especially since the Viking Raiders haven't been in many terribly long matches. I think 15,
right. No,
15
no,
minutes would
no,
feel.
No, they have not at all. So, yeah, no, you're right about that. It felt like a longer version of a Viking Raiders squash match, and it's, you know, it did not do much good for the Street Profits at all. It was, you know, yeah, so again, no, it didn't really help them at all. It didn't feel like they're being groomed for something more, or this is the start of a long term, you know, build to them finally winning the titles. It just felt like it was a match to fill time, and this soon into Street Profits run on the main roster, you know, after all the months of vignettes, for them to be put in a tag title match with zero notice and then lose so definitively. No, I not a fan at all.
Yeah. That was pretty wild. You know, that was not something that that I expected in the least. And it is kind of interesting, too, that there are two kind of obvious teams for the Viking Raiders to take on that are size appropriate. And I would imagine we're going to get to an AOP Viking Raiders showdown sooner rather than later. And
yeah, That definitely has to come, and I certainly look forward to that.
And I'm trying to think of who the other big team is that.
Well, I guess you would count Anderson Gallows, just counting Gallows.
Well, and I guess they did mention, Anderson and Gallows did mention having a future match with them, which, you know, obviously they have an argument since they won it best in the world over Viking Raiders. I'm not sure if it was under questionable circumstances since I did not watch that show.
No, it really wasn't. I mean, and until that point, Viking Raiders had been totally undefeated, so I really don't even feel like that was the right decision to go with it. And then because we're going to be, but by the time we get, well, I guess they could throw a Viking Raiders OC match on TLC and have Viking Raiders just win. So there's Anderson and Gallows title shot right there.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't completely shock me. I haven't gone to WWE.com to check on what the match lineup is at this point. But if SmackDown has its druthers together this week, I would imagine that they will add 2 to 3 matches to the card.
Right.
Thus making that matchup maybe not necessary. I don't know, you know, because what the women's TLC match is happening. And I'm trying to think of which other, are Carrillo and Andrade?
No, that's as far as I know. No, that once again, but
no, but we got Alistair and, Buddy Murphy. I'm trying to think of, and Rusev and Lashley will have a match.
Yeah, Rusev and Lashley are having a tables match, yes.
Yeah, so that's at least 3 matches right there. And we get another 3 matches. Oh, yeah, I guess a tag team match is not out of the realm of possibility then.
Yeah, well the SmackDown tag titles are already on the show with New Day versus Revival again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and now I'm just annoyed. Like, I'm going to have to go to WWE.com just to see who I was thinking of for the roster. Who was the other kind of big-ish tag team? On the Raw side of things.
Raw side of things. I mean, Heavy Machinery's on SmackDown, but I don't remember what the big team you're thinking of.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm just it's gonna bug me until I figure it out. So I'll leave it at that. But yeah, it would Oh, that's like Raw itself. No, Raw superstars, people.
Yeah, I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah, it'll hit me sometime when I'm through here. Oh, poor Mojo Rawley. Not poor Mojo Rawley. I'm not thinking of anyone. I'm out of my mind.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
Yep. So, we'll leave it at that. I guess I could argue that it's the Usos, but I'm not sure what's up with the Usos at all. I'm going to hope that there's something to do with rehab being involved in that one. But, you know, I will leave that speculation up to someone else. Yeah, so I guess I could definitely see a Raw tag team match filling this thing, filling out the TLC card. I guess anything to talk about with other wrestling federations to cover? Anything, you know, belatedly from... Oh, I guess I could mention it. I did not watch Being the Elite this week.
I haven't watched it in weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm completely done with it.
I was wondering if you read about why the audio was dog shit. Like, I honestly was starting to. I was like, hold on, is this my TV or is something wrong with the audio here?
On AEW.
On AEW.
Why did you say Being the Elite then?
Because they supposedly they addressed the audio issues on the show.
Gotcha. Okay.
That
no,
is
no, no. Oh, the audio on AEW last few weeks has been at least at the beginning of the show, while they're still trying to sync everything correctly, the audio has been pretty terrible. The they've got the crowd noise turned up too high, and you can't hear the announcers. The ring is mic'd too much, so you every time someone takes a bump, it makes that crashing sound. Yeah, music's not being pumped in right, which is something that Jeremy mentioned when he was on. It's been an issue from the beginning. It's something Jeremy mentioned when after he went to AEW.
I guess I was kind of interested to see what they had to say about that situation, because I guess to me, it was very noticeable, this past week.
Yeah.
Like that,
it definitely has been. Yeah. The certainly this past week, the issues with, you know, crowd noise drowning out the announcers completely. That didn't get resolved for quite a while into the show.
Well,
and it's pretty inexcusable.
And not to me, at least on my feed, like it was okay, and then it got really bad, and then it got okay, and then it got bad again. And I'm like, what? How did you not solve the problem? Why did this pop up again? Like, that to me made it even worse was the fact that the problem repeated itself. It's just like, oh my god, what is going on with this clown show over here, guys? So yeah, I guess that's probably not the best thing that I remember about your product is how terrible the sound was. But, yeah, I don't know. Was there anything else that stuck out to you on AEW this past week?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It was so long ago now.
Well, I'll tell you.
That was so long ago.
And I'll tell you one thing that I at least am getting to the point where... you know, I do feel like NXT was my favorite show in wrestling. I feel like, despite the fact that there have been some obstacles since they have gone to 2 hours, I still generally like that 2 hours better than any other 2 hours on TV.
Yeah, NXT is... The top of the card stuff in NXT is just the best stuff in all of wrestling. The way they have the parody and the interweaving stories in both the men's and the women's divisions with so much competition for title shots. It's really, really good. You know, it's the interweaving of the storylines and you know alliances either permanent or temporary being formed, but still everyone's got their eyes on the big prize. It's just so damn good right now. I said I'm really big fan of it. of what they're doing right now.
Because I still haven't gotten it. So I guess I will. That's to me still. I know that they're not competing head to head, and I'm still probably going to give AEW more than whatever amount of time they've been on the air to kind of work out their vision. Like I guess I generally understand that sometimes when you're creating something almost from scratch, it might take some time for them to fully work into what they have in their heads for a wrestling league.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that you can give them time on and give them some leeway with. Sound is definitely not one of them.
agreed.
And the overall, there's also some inconsistencies and some plot holes on AEW TV. It really felt like between AEW TV and social media the next day, it seems like the motivation for Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny to attack Cody Rhodes has changed from them going after the top dog to them being hired goons for MJF.
Yeah, not a good look.
No, not at all. It was pretty jarring. I mean, and I'm pretty sure maybe they even released an online only promo from MJF that very night after they already aired a video from, you know, with Butcher and the Blade with Allie giving their mission statement, you know, mentioning nothing about MJF.
And it's Bunny Slay, sir. Bunny Slay.
Bunny Slay? Oh, boy.
You know, there are going to be times that the wrestlers do not know best.
Yeah, right. This show, that is I think there seem to be two common complaints about AEW. Number one, there is just not a cohesive vision, because it feels like at least each of the EVPs has control of their own section of the show, with other people also having input. I'm sure Jericho, you know, comes up with all of his own stuff, and maybe a few others. You know, I'm sure, you know, Moxley especially gets pretty much probably has carte blanche to say and do whatever he wants. But it just feels like, you know, sometimes at points one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing, and the show just doesn't have a consistent tone to it. I'll let you respond to that. Then I'll get to the second thing.
I guess I'm not sure that I had thought about it in that regard.
Or a head writer. They've actually. Talk about that as approach to their line of thinking.
And I do think that at some point it can be a pro, because it's just that there are cons. Like that's the one thing that you know, it's kind of like a backup quarterback. Like, you always like the idea of the backup quarterback until the backup quarterback comes in, more times than not. I mean, I'm going to say that I'm okay with Duck Hodges currently, so I'm okay with some backup quarterbacks. But in general, like, there's a reason he's a backup quarterback. He's not as good as the starter. But sometimes you do find someone that maybe is as... That analogy went off the rails somewhere.
I didn't want to stop you, but... But no, I mean...
I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, there's just going to be some cons to... Like, everyone has always said, we're trying... And maybe this is more where I should have gone.
Okay, I'll... Should I say... Should the defensive coach and the offensive coach just do whatever the heck they want without consulting the head coach?
Oh.
Something like that?
Yeah, that's probably one good way to go. There are definitely drawbacks to that, to the system that they're running. And it will truly make it, like, everyone's always said, hey, we want an alternative to the WWE. And having kind of these disparate parts could be a way to do that, but you need to find a way to make things play better.
Yeah, I agree, yes. And then the other common complaint that is valid is there's still, it's really, you know, we're over 2 months into this thing now, they're still introducing new characters and they're new players, and just, you know, the whole Butcher and the Blade debut with Excalibur knowing everything about them and JR just completely baffled, that was just so bad. And you know, you got Excalibur, they don't seem to be, you know, filling in their announcer. You know, JR kind of probably talked about there's no voice in his ear, but at first place, but then at other points, it seems like on his podcast, he complains about not, you know, knowing when certain things are coming or not being prepped better. So it's, once again, that whole double-edged sword. I mean, Excalibur is definitely, you know, the voice of the smart fan, so to speak. And he's got all the experience on the indies. He knows everyone, you know, intimately. That can come in handy a lot, but I guess the general complaint is they just act like the audience should already know who these people are, or should go out and do their own research.
And I guess especially with the introduction of the Butcher and Blade, and I shouldn't say don't refer to them by their old personalities, but you could almost no sell their old personalities and just go for it. You know, just use this as a rebirthing stage for your character. And maybe just mention their old personas in passing and then not make as big of a deal out of it. Yeah, like, I guess right. I thought they made too big of a deal out of their old personas. Plus, I guess... maybe it's just because it's very different from how Allie has ever been presented when I've seen her on Impact. But,
Well, she's always kind of done the bunny thing, called herself the bunny, I think. Unless that's just a thing she does online or on her social media. That's another thing. Plus, you know, the transition of Allie from, you know, smiling happy Allie to this bunny character with Butcher and the Blade. I know one of them is a real life husband. At least, you know, I know that.
I do at least know that part.
Their motivations, and of course, as we mentioned earlier, their motivations being completely muddled by some inconsistent creative. And of course, probably now the worst thing on AEW TV since they just used the librarians as jobber fodder is the stuff with Brandi Rhodes. You can't just take an established character and just decide one day that, you know what, they're going to be a witch now.
Oh man, I'm trying to remember what that was.
The stuff with her and Kong where she's cutting the girl's hair.
Oh, Jiminy Christmas. Yeah. I guess that was one I tried to forget about, like SmackDown, but failed to do.
Yeah, I guess it's really bad. I mean, she's not terrible with the delivery, but the content's just not there. Her mentioning the Nightmare Collective, an extension of the Nightmare family. So what, is Cody involved in this? Because that's what he's called his supporters, but I'm not sure if he's ever used the term Nightmare family on AEW on TNT. So it's like they're they might be getting themselves confused with things that they've mentioned in on other platforms, but have never actually, introduced on TNT. So that consistency there becomes a problem.
Yeah, because I don't watch those other things. Like, that's one of those. I guess that's gonna be that to me is a lesson that they should learn fairly quick, I would hope. But those are all kind of great examples of why I'm sitting here clueless with some of this stuff popping up. You know, some of it follows, but yeah, their motivations, I don't know. Why are they coming out from the bottom of the ring, honestly? Like, I get why Bray Wyatt's coming out of the bottom of the ring.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing. It now feels like there are, what, three cult factions now in AEW between the Dark Order, whatever the hell Brandy's doing, and this Butcher Bunny and the Blade Steel.
Yeah, that puts a nice little bow on things. Like, it is kind of weird to have three kind of occult related groups on your show.
And then, of course, as I keep mentioning, the inconsistency, which with, are they just hired mercenaries? Like, what's going on? I mean, I do want. I mean, these are all, I think some of these things are fairly easy to fix if you know how to fix them.
Yeah, and they can fix it by doing it properly on TV. So, yeah, if they just come out with a definitive answer on TV tomorrow, all will be well, and we won't need to bitch about this next week. Any other parting thoughts before we mosey on out of here?
No. I think we hit things pretty good. So I guess it's time for the bell time beer.
Today would be Buckeye Lake Pontoon Pale Ale on a previous OPA episode. I can't recall if it was 148 or 149. Ken had one of these, and I mentioned it is one of my favorite pale ales. Period. End of sentence. Like, it is a fantastic pale ale. I like the lighter hop flavors in it. It is not, all things considered, with all the citrusy IPAs or pale ales that I like. This one, not terribly citrusy, really. But it does have a nice blending of hops with just a nice varied character to it, and a nice maltiness to hold up to it. So yeah, if you happen to be in the area, I say find some Buckeye Lake Pontoon Pale Ale if you get in this area in Ohio. Sue at DeFrango11 for those beer opinions. At Stunt Cali for all the wrestling opinions from the one across the microphone from me. And the brand in total is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.